Well, we've entered the month of Nisan and the month of Geula. Pesach is in the air, Pesach cleaning certainly in the air. And we would like to devote two Mondays to Inyan Pesach, this Monday and next Monday, Mirtz Hashem. I'm not exactly sure where I'll be broadcasting from this time next week. Hopefully, put myself out of the way, but either way. So we like to begin with the matter of halacha and or minhag, and the question that I wanted to discuss this evening is interesting because in many circles, one could say, it's not even a question, and certainly we might not be aware of the various answers to this question. And I refer to the question of when is the right time to bake matzahs? I think for many of us, certainly today, but in either way, in our experience, the right time to bake matzahs is hopefully sometime before we buy them, hopefully in the same year, and we buy them sometime before Pesach. And the matter is as simple as that. However, if we look in the Shulchan Aruch, in Orach Chaim, Simen Taf Nun Ches, we will find the following. Noagim, there is a custom. Shelo Lalush Matzas Mitzvah Be'erev Pesach. The matzahs that will be used for the mitzvah of Seder night. The custom is not to knead them, meaning not to begin to prepare these matzahs on Erev Pesach, ad achar sheish shos, till after 6 hours of the day. That is to say, till after chatzos. And why? Shehuzman hakrabas korban Pesach. Because that's the time that they would offer the Korban Pesach. So the way the Shulchan Aruch expresses it, Nohagim, the custom is, or there are those who are accustomed to, not bake matzahs before Erev Pesach afternoon, which means in a week and a half, it would be Wednesday afternoon from Chatzos, because Wednesday evening is already Seder night. Where does this come from, and how exactly does it land? The truth is, this insistence of preparing the matzahs for Seder night, specifically on the afternoon of Erev Pesach, goes back to antiquity. It is mentioned already in the tshuvas of the Gaonim, or of some Gaonim. So it's very, very well established centuries back. And Rishonim, who discussed this, cite this idea in the name of the Yerushalmi. So far we have names. Gaonim say it should be done. Some Gaonim, apparently there's a Yerushalmi to this effect. But who is it that begins to give it the explanation that will lead to the understanding, or at least the primary understanding of this idea? That is Rashi. Rashi is cited by a number of works that are mentioned, that are written by his Talmidim, which represent the opinions of Rashi. These are works like Sefer HaOra and Sefer HaPardes and Sidur Rashi and Machzor Vitri. Each of these is a whole enterprise. The world of Rashi is its own world. We're familiar with him as the commentator. Parshandasa on Chumash and on the Gemara, but his halachic views and so on, there's many works written by his Talmidim that discuss them. Where does it all begin? There are two mitzvahs, or two of the mitzvahs of Seder night are, in pure terms, the mitzvah of matzah and the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. These two mitzvahs are halachically equated. That is a concept which is called hekesh. Hekesh means when two things are mentioned together in the pasuk, it is in order to equate them halachically. And matzos and korban pesach are mentioned together in the pasuk. In Parshas Bo, the korban pesach is to be eaten tzlieish u'matzos. The korban is roasted and it's eaten together with matzos. That means whatever is true for korban pesach is true for matzah. And actually, this is an idea which is explicitly discussed in the Gemara. In the end of Maseches Psachim, Daf Kuf Kaf, the Gemara says that till when does a person have to eat matzah? Do you have the whole night? Do you only have until Chatzos for the actual mitzvah of matzah? The Gemara says, it depends. It depends what your opinion is with regards to Korban Pesach, because that is a machlokas in between the Tanaim, between the rabbis of the Mishnah. Some say the Korban Pesach can be eaten the whole night, but others say that the Korban Pesach can only be eaten until Chatzos. It's like Makas Bechoros. You cannot eat it after Chatzos. So that is a well-known machlokas with regards to Korban Pesach. We normally think about it, perhaps, as we get closer to the Afikoman, because the Afikoman we eat as a zecher to the Korban Pesach. And that is why we're mindful, since some say the Korban Pesach itself can only be eaten till Chatzos, the Afikoman should also be eaten before Chatzos. That's the expression of the Shulchan Aruch, yizaher. A person should take care, be careful to eat the Korban, the Afikoman, before Chatzos. Other people eat it even after Chatzos. There are conflicting opinions. So we normally think about the timing of the Korban Pesach with reference to Afikoman. Everything else, we assume, has happened by that stage. And it is indeed a machlokas, Korban Pesach. But the Gemara informs us that aside from the Afikoman that we eat as a remembrance for the Korban Pesach, the mitzvah of matzah itself is bound to the time of the Korban Pesach through this Hekesh. If you hold that Korban Pesach could only be eaten until Chatzos of the night, then you only fulfill the mitzvah of matzah until Chatzos. If a person went past Chatzos, they're out of the mitzvah. If you hold that you have the whole night, so then you have the whole night for matzah as well. So the Gemara we see discussing the parity and connection between Korban Pesach and the mitzvah of matzah with regards to the timing of their consumption, of eating that. Rashi says the same will be true in terms of the time of their preparation. Just like the Korban Pesach can only be prepared on the afternoon of Erev Pesach, and if you try and prepare it beforehand, it's possible. So too, the matzah that you fulfill the obligation on Seder night will also must be prepared on Erev Pesach after Chatzos. And if it's prepared beforehand, it's possible. This is the opinion of Rashi, and many other Rishonim also concurred, and therefore Erev Pesach was spent in the afternoon, was typically spent baking those matzahs. Now, we should know that this is the opinion of Rashi. It's cited in the Shulchan Aruch as nohagim, as a custom. For not all Rishonim agree. Sfardi Rishonim do not mention this at all. The Rif and the Rambam do not mention this idea at all. And even amongst Ashkenazi Rishonim, there is much dissent. And of the two counter-arguments, so firstly, many Rishonim cite the Tosefta, and the Tosefta explicitly discusses the question of matzah that was baked a good while before Pesach. Is it kosher? And the Tosefta says, well, if you had in mind to use it for Seder night, it's kosher. If not, then not. So we see that for the Tosefta, there is no problem per se of baking matzahs earlier than Erev Pesach afternoon or Erev Pesach at all, One just needs to have the intent that this will be used for the matzah, and that, we know, is critically important. One, all agree, one only fulfills the mitzvah of matzah on Seder night with matzah that is called shemura, meaning it was guarded with the intent that it be used for matzah on Seder night. But the timing, it could be a month before, it could be more than a month before, so that's explicitly in the Tosefta. And thus, say the Rishonim, if there's a Yerushalmi, which may be stringent in this regard, which we began with, but then the Tosefta is lenient, we follow the Tosefta. At this point, I think everyone else just tries to stay out of the way in a machlokus between the Tosefta and the Yerushalmi, so it's left for the Rishonim to arbiter, and many, say, follow the lenient position of the Tosefta. And moreover, some maintain that one can even demonstrate from the Gemara that matzahs can definitely be prepared even earlier than Erev Pesach afternoon. How so? There's a very interesting Mishnah, in fact. The Mishnah, when it talks about the importance of intent, which, as we said, that is critically important, that the intent that these are baked or guarded, as we say, l'shem mitzvahs matzah, that intention is crucial. Now, there are other matzahs that might be completely kosher l'Pesach, but may be disqualified for Seder night. Among them, says the Mishnah in the second perek of Psachim, what if a person bakes matzah for purposes of Korban Todah, to accompany the Korban Todah? We know that the Korban Todah is accompanied by 40 loaves of bread, and 30 of them are matzah. And a person may wish to bring a Korban Todah. The matzah that he bakes is 100% kosher l'Pesach. It's matzah. It cannot be chametz. The question is, could he use it for Seder night? He baked it intending to bring it with his Korban Todah, but he had spare. It turned out that he baked too many, and perfect. And now he has matzahs for Seder night. Is that acceptable? Says the Mishnah, it depends. If he baked these matzahs with the exclusive intention of bringing them together with his Korban Todah, he can't use them for Seder night, for the reason that we've mentioned already a couple of times. They were baked without the intention of being used for Seder night. They were baked with a different intention, Korban Todah. However, says the Mishnah, if his mind is a little bit more open, if his options are a little bit more ranging, and he has in mind that perhaps he'll use it for Todah, but he also might use it for Seder night and so on, then it's kosher. What does this have to do with us? Says the Mordechai, one of the great Ashkenazi Rishonim, contemporary of the Rosh, why is the Mishnah talking about a person baking matzahs to accompany a Korban Todah? When will he do that? Not on the 14th. You cannot bring a Korban Todah on the 14th of Nisan, because you can't give it the full time that it needs to eat it. Because of the 40 loaves of bread, 30 are matzah, but 10 are chametz. And therefore, one cannot bring a Korban Todah on the 14th. It's for that reason that we do not recite Mizmor Lesoda on Erev Pesach. Certainly not on Pesach itself because of the chametz, but even on Erev Pesach, because you're going to have to stop eating chametz, and you never bring a korban if you know from the outset you'll be curtailed additionally with the amount of time that you have to eat it. Therefore, a korban todah cannot be brought on the 14th of Nisan. It must be brought on the 13th or earlier, yet here we are talking about whether you can use the matzahs that were baked for the korban todah for Pesach. What does that tell you? That matzahs that are baked prior to Erev Pesach are entirely acceptable for Seder night. That is a very interesting proof or argument that is cited by a number of Rishonim for the case of leniency. We see from Lachmei Todah that the matzahs for Seder night are acceptable even if baked before Erev Pesach, which means that the halachic equation of Korban Pesach and matzah is only with regards to the eating, not with regards to the preparation. They're not tied to each other that way. the pasuk only equated them within the context of eating. Ve'ochlues habasar balayla hazeh tzli'esh u'matzos. So the pasuk says they should eat or consume from the korban pesach together with matzos. So the frame of their equation is in terms of eating. For eating, the times are the same, but in terms of preparation, not so. Korban pesach obviously is only brought on erev pesach, but matzos can be baked beforehand. Now, what's very interesting is just to come back and see historically, and perhaps even also, minhagically, an emanation of this discussion. What happens when Erev Pesach is Shabbos? Which was the case last year, apparently it will not be the case for a good number of years, so this is Torah Lishma for the next 19 years. Now, certainly one will not be baking matzos on Shabbos. No one says that. And for some, by the way, that is proof that this hekesh is not on an absolute Torah level. If it was, you'd be baking matzos on Shabbos afternoon, just like you shech the korban pesach on Shabbos afternoon. But either way, all agree that one does not bake matzos on Shabbos. So then, what do? And here there are two opinions. It's either before or after. The Shulchan Aruch, as he cites the minhag that people bake matzos on the afternoon of Erev Pesach, concludes, it's a very short section of Shulchan Aruch, uv'yodalet shechal yos b'Shabbos, if the 14th of Nisan, Erev Pesach, will be on Shabbos, lashin be'erev Shabbos, you know when you bake, on Friday afternoon, achar she'shos, also after chatzos. In other words, one keeps the afternoon time frame, but pulls it back a day before. However, there were many communities who followed, in part of following Rashi's approach, that when Erev Pesach fell on Shabbos, they would not bake matzahs on Friday afternoon. That's too early. They would bake matzahs on Motzei Shabbos, before the Seder. So we have enough to deal with, we feel. When Motzei Shabbos and then Seder, just put Yaknahas together, and that's more than enough for us. But in these communities, they would be baking matzahs and Motzei Shabbos, and that actually led to its own type of time crunch. Because if you're baking and there's more than one person baking, etc., it wasn't so easy to be sure that you would eat your matzahs before chatzos. Because a lot of time had been the baking. We assume that they went very sparing on the dayenus in years like that to be sure that they were able to get to the time for matzah. But this was the minhag of these communities. Very interesting. And that's how it's presented in the Shulchan Aruch. Many people are not makpid on this practice. The Shulchan Aruch says it's a minhag. Many people don't have this minhag. It's recorded that the Vilna Gaon in the Maaseh Rav, which records the minhagim of the Vilna Gaon, he was not particular about baking on Erev Pesach. The Aruch HaShulchan, as he delicately puts it, says that many people around you have never heard of this idea. And the reason why is because there's actually, as the Mishnah Berurah quotes, also says many people do not have this minhag. The reason why is because there is another question, and with this we'll conclude this more halakhic segment of our shir. We know that even a minute amount of chametz can render the whole mixture forbidden. Chametz asers bekol shehu. We do not subscribe to bitul b'shishim. It's not nullified, one part in 60. Even a minute amount can render everything that's part of this stringent nature of chametz. That is only true from the time that it's osur to eat chametz. If a mixture took place, somehow chametz got mixed in with something before Pesach, it does answer to the ratios of 1 to 60. Normal rules apply. That's why very often, if something was baked, it will say baked on Erev Pesach, as if to say, if there's any type of shayla, the rules of 1 to 60 apply. it only becomes hypersensitive that even a minute amount will ask for the whole thing from the time that chametz itself is forbidden. But the question is, when is that? From when Pesach comes in? Some say. But others say even from chatzos of Erev Pesach. Where we know it's already forbidden from the Torah to eat chametz, doesn't have the penalty of kares, but already from that stage it will aser in a minute amount. Baking matzah on Erev Pesach afternoon is a risky process, because you can know, according to those opinions, that it already asers b'mashehu, you can no longer rely on bittel. And thus, says the Mishnah Brura, in deference to those opinions that we already, it will usher the whole mixture, best to avoid it, bake your matzahs beforehand, and that's where the counter minhag came from, so to speak. This was said by the Mishnah Brura in his time, as Rav Sternberg adds, certainly in our time, where we don't bake matzahs at home, and the matzahs are baked on a much more industrial level, one can only imagine what would be involved in a factory opening only on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, and everyone's going to get their matzahs. There'll be a lot of Pesach Shenis going on for that year. And therefore, this is why many people are not makbid, but some people still are. Chassidim generally are. The Arizal was makbid on this, and therefore those who are many types of sects of Chassidim, if you have a smaller group and they're able to do it, so they do, and they sing Hallel while they're doing it, and they've got their mechanisms for Bittul to take care of the Mashihu process. So either way, these are some of the highlights. On the one hand, if we go back to Rashi, who felt that matzahs baked earlier than Erev Pesach afternoon are disqualified, and yet we see that as part of the broader views of the Rishonim, and in turn, and see how things work out vis-a-vis the Shulchan Aruch and post-Shulchan Aruch, etc. Lemaisa, every person should follow keminhag avosav v'rabosav, their family minhag, their tradition. And I would say just another point, maybe it's obvious, but sometimes it goes missing. There's many things that people think about when they are performing the mitzvah of matzah. As we know, one should have a kazayas, and then one needs to know how to configure the kazayas for the first one, etc. And it also is a time frame, which is called kadechilas pras. An eating session, in order to have cohesion, needs to be within a certain time frame. Otherwise, it's just all over the place. How long is that time? One needs to know. All of these things are true. But what's also true is eating matzah on Seder night is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah from the Torah, and mitzvahs should be performed with joy. And therefore, as much as, and one can do all of these things, as much as one needs to have a bit of an eye on the clock, as is it chatzos? Well, it won't be chatzos for the matzah, but is it kadechilas pras? And how long is the kazayas? These are technical things. They're all very, very important. They are the gashmias of the mitzvah. But none of that should preclude a person, should not be eaten in a state of anxiety or anything like that. It's a mitzvah from the Torah to eat matzah on Seder night. And like all mitzvahs, especially the properties that the Mefarshim talk about and Chazal talk about with regards to the matzah, the atmosphere should be one of joy, and that should pervade and prevail as one fulfills this very, very special mitzvah. So having spoken a little bit about a matter of halacha / minhag of baking matzahs, we now proceed to the Seder itself. And the very first words that are uttered as part of the Seder, once everything is set up, are the words of the poem Kadesh Urchatz. And this is very, very widely accepted. Interestingly, Kadesh Urchatz is not the only poem that details and describes the steps of the Seder. There are numerous such poems from other Rishonim, and even from later. I, to date, have seen something like 18 different poems on this, and each one with its own inflection, and so on. But this one has mazel, and this was has acquired a treasure place at the beginning of every Haggadah. Who wrote it? Kadesh Urchatz. Many people ascribe it to Rashi, but there is also a strong tradition that the author of this Kaddish Urchatz poem was somewhat later than Rashi, one of the great Balei Atosus, Rabbeinu Shmuel of Falaise. Rabbeinu Shmuel of Falaise, Falaise in Spain, pardon me, France, he was one of the students, he was one of the teachers of the Rebbe Meir of Rothenburg. So he is very well established there amongst the Balei HaTosfos. I recall actually, and the Eschatoi Animazkir Hayom, I mentioned Kaddish Urchatz 2 or 3 years ago, and I mentioned only the tradition, the attribution to Rashi, and I was contacted by a Talmud of mine who was descended from Rabbeinu Shmuel of Falaise, and he mentioned to me that they feel that it was from Rabbeinu Shmuel of Falaise, and certainly there are many who say that. It's a whole discussion, and therefore I hasten to make amends this time round, though there are those two traditions. Either way, what is the point and what is the goal of this poem? Now, one could say balabatishli that there's so much going on in the Seder and therefore it's important to know the steps, one shouldn't get confused, and so on. And certainly there is much to that. But this year, yesterday in fact, I came across a tshuva of the Maharshal, Rabbi Shlomo Luria, one of the great early Acharonim, and he himself has a poem outlining the steps of the Seder, and he discusses briefly why these poems are important, and what is their role, what is their contribution. And within his words, this is in the tshuvas of the Maharshal, Simen Pei Ches, and says, V'gam kivnu, it seems to me, gam ken kivnu, that the intention of those who made these poems, al derech ha-pasuk, they're basing themselves, or within the spirit of the pasuk, hashir yiyeh lechem kelel hischadesh chag. Where is that pasuk from, and what does it have to do with us? That pasuk, and we'll say it again in just a moment, is from the Novi Yishaya. Perek Lamed, chapter 30 of Yishayahu, Yerushalayim is being besieged by Sanherib, the king of Ashur. And everyone is in disarray, and everyone is fraught with worry. They think to make an alliance with Egypt. They think that might help them. Yishayah comes along to tell to tell Chizkiyahu HaMelech, do not make that alliance, you won't need it. That's not the way to be approaching this at all. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will deliver you. And when he does, there will be song. You will sing songs of praise about this. Hashir yiyeh lechem kelel hischadesh chag. Like the night when the chag is sanctified. And that is a reference to Seder night. It's a reference to Leil Pesach. And of course, we know that the downfall, that plague that struck all of Sanherib's legions took place on Seder night. In the Piyutim in Nirtza, at the end of the Seder, we actually make reference to one of those things that we say, I don't recall whether it's Vayi B'chatzi HaLaila or V'amartim Seva Pesach, one of the two, but there is a reference to the downfall of Sanherib's army. It took place on Seder night. And the way that Yishayah says it to King Chizkiyahu is, there will be song as a result of that, like you experience on Seder night. What does that tell us? It tells us, says the Maharshal, the mashma shakol ye b'shiros uv'ne'imos. Everything on Seder night should happen through song. It kelel hiskadesh chag is a night of shira. And that's what these poems are for. The night, and it's very interesting, I mean, the Maharshal is basically noting, seemingly, and it's a universal custom, that the poem is sung. Every family has its, or community, or different regions, they sing Kaddish Urchatz. The night begins with a song, says Maharshal, because it's a night of song. as per the Navi Yeshaya. That's very interesting. When we say, when we start to sing Kadesh Urchatz, we might not be as mindful as we should, or as we would like to be, that we are atmospherically already inaugurating the evening as an evening of song. It will end with song for sure, and there'll be plenty in between now and then, but that's how it begins. I believe a very wonderful thought to accompany us as we sing Kadesh Urchatz, exactly to appreciate what it is that it's doing. And there's many different discussions actually about the phraseology of Kadesh Urchatz, as we've discussed in the past. Why is it that we say Kadesh and Rechatz, Kadesh Urchatz? We don't use the Vav to connect anything else. And why is it the first time around we say Rechatz for the first washing before Karpas, and the second time we say Rochtza? What's the difference between Rechatz and Rochtza? Motzi Matza. Is that one thing? Is it two things? Is it Hamotzi and Achilas Matza, representing Lechem Mishnah and Lechem Oni? Or is it all one thing, like Shulchan Orech? And what is Nirtza? We know everything that we need to do until we get to Nirtza. What do we do at Nirtza? Well, there's many songs, but they're much later than Nirtza came before those songs. So these are some of the classic, as befits the words of Rishonim. Whether it's Rashi, Rabbi Nishmuel, the Falez, these are Bali Atosfos. And everything is written with precision, as Mefarshim, even until our time, continue to mine them for insight. So that is a word about how we introduce the Seder of Kadesh and Urchatz. With regards to Karpas, there is an idea that we've mentioned many times, but I came across a supplementary idea. And we'll begin with the idea itself. Well known, my father's Zatzal would say this. I think this has gone around the world. Many people, that if I meet them, and I've never met them before, the first thing they will say is, your father's explanation of Karpas changed everything for us. And that is based on the idea that, what is Karpas all about? Formally, it actually maybe might not even have an answer, because it could be one of the things that we do in order to arouse the attention of the children. Well, if it's meant to arouse the attention of the children, that might be its sole purpose, which is a worthy purpose. But maybe there is no explanation other than that. If they see people are dipping before they've even made hamotzi, they'll wonder why, and then they're in, and we can start to tell the story. But as Rabbeinu Manoach says, the word karpas itself relates to the very beginning of the story, the way that we went down to Mitzrayim through the tensions between Yosef and the brothers. They sold him down, and karpas, which is a type of wool, as we describe in Megillas Esther, Chur Karpas Utecheles, in the very beginning, in Achashverosh's feast, that was a type of wool that Rashi associates with the Kasonas Pasim, with Yosef's special coat, which was a point of contention between him and the brothers. And therefore, we take the vegetable and we call it Karpas, and we dip that in salt water as a zecher for them dipping the Kasonas Pasim of Yosef into blood. So we give full recognition and awareness to how the story began all the way from the beginning. There is something, as reminded of it recently again, my father mentioned, that in the times that we would bring the Korban Pesach, the Gemara describes how once the Korban had been brought, the people would take it, they would sling it over their shoulders and walk to wherever they're going to have the Seder. And the Gemara in Maseches Psachim records a comment on that. And that is Tayos. This is, as Rashi explains, Derech Socharim Yishma'elim. This is how Yishmaelite merchants carry their wares. They sling it over their back. And Rav Shlomo Kluger, in his Perush on the Yiriyah Shlomo, one of his Perushim, more correctly, on the Haggadah, Yiriyah Shlomo, he asked the question, why does the Gemara need to inform Lee that the way that they sling the Korban over their back is the way that Yishmaelite merchants ply their wares. But Shlomo Kluger, again, resonating on this idea, says that as we are about to begin the story, we recall how the whole thing began. It began by Yosef being sold to Mitzrayim through Socher Mishma'elim. And therefore, we give a recognition to that as well. The Maaseh Hashem, Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, also independently has this understanding of karpas. He doesn't explain the word karpas the way that Rabbeinu Manoach does, but he actually says just one further point. I believe the Ben Ish Chai also echoes this, but it was preceded by the Maaseh Hashem. The truth of the matter is, as we know, on Seder night, we dip twice. Meaning, we dip, of course, that's one of the questions of the Manish Tana. We dip before we tell the story, and afterwards. Before we tell the story, we dip the karpas in salt water. And after we tell the story, there's another dipping. We dip the maror in charoses. Says the Maaseh Hashem, it seems to me, we would like to suggest that the two dippings that we do on Seder night in the beginning and the end, before and after, themselves correspond to two dippings that took place in our national experience. One before and one after. Namely, the whole thing began with a matbilin, right? They took Yosef's coat and they dipped it in blood, and therefore that was the before dipping. But then it culminated also with a dipping, because on the night of Korban Pesach, says the Pasuk, you need to take the Agudas Ezov, the bundle of hyssop, utevaltem ba'dam asher basaf, and you need to dip it in blood, apply it to the doorpost, and therefore, and corresponding to that, we have the maror, which is dipped in charoses. Interestingly, and perhaps ironically, the second dipping, which was a prelude to our freedom, in our Seder experience, it's the dipping of maror, which is about the slavery, but either way, this is the filling out the picture that actually this remembrance of the dipping of Yosef's coat takes place apropos of a remembrance of another dipping later on, and those are the two matbilims of Seder night. Once again, atmospheric markers of the evening, if we are alert for them. So thus, we have our karpas. And then we get to Magid, first Halach Ma'anya, and then we have the question of Manishtana. Now, what's interesting, a very interesting insight into actually what Manishtana is offered by Osher Weiss within the context of a halachic discussion. And the background is, I think it might be fair to say, that we don't really see Manishtana as adding anything, or any information, certainly, to Seder night, to what's meant to happen on Seder night. The child just doesn't know what's happening. So what he might be doing is piquing his curiosity, or we pique his curiosity, to then tell him about the evening, but Manishtana itself doesn't bring anything to the table. It doesn't add anything to our mitzvah. It just sets things up so that we're able to fulfill the mitzvah. But Rav Osher Weiss suggests that might actually not be so accurate. It could be that there's something that is mentioned in Manishtana which isn't mentioned anywhere else in the Seder. So you need Manishtana. What is mentioned there? He just doesn't know. But the question is, Manishtana halayla hazeh mikol halaylos. Why is this night different from all other nights? The question that's voiced in the Manishtana is, there's something special about this night. Now, the child just doesn't know what it is. Whoever is asking Manishtana doesn't know what it is. But they are noting and expressing that there's something about this night that's different from all other nights. That's never really mentioned explicitly in the Haggadah. We tell the story, but in a sense, The question as to why we're telling the story this evening is really relying on the child's question, which is what is so special about this evening? Once we start to tell the story, the subtext of that story is, and that's what's so special about this evening. But we never say that in words. But it's very important. In fact, according to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, this actually is what the Rambam means when he invokes another mitzvah as he presents and introduces the mitzvah of telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. According to the Rambam, and Emet Hashem, we'll look into this in further detail next week, but the Rambam begins by saying there's a mitzvah to tell the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim on Seder night, as it says, and he quotes a pasuk in the end of Parshas Bo, Zachor es hayom hazeh asher yotzasa mimitzrayim, remember this day that you left Mitzrayim, v'chein hu omer, Zachor es yom haShabbos lekadsho, as it says, remember Shabbos. And many, many Meforshim are wondering, what is the Rambam seeing within the Zohar of Shabbos that helps shed light on the Zohar of Seder night? It's more or less self-explanatory. Why does it have to be like the Zohar of Shabbos? What does that add to our understanding? And Reb Chaim Soloveitchik said that what we glean from the Rambam's association of the story on Seder night to Kiddush on Shabbos is that Kiddush on Shabbos is said on Shabbos about Shabbos. In other words, it's very apropos that you make Kiddush on Shabbos because it's Shabbos. And that also needs to be emphasized on Seder night. We're talking about all these things this evening because tonight is Pesach. It's remembering not just the story, but that it happened today. Like it's Shabbos today. It's Pesach today. So says Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, that's how he understands what the Rambam is enlisting from the mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos. The Zohar of Shabbos is it Shabbos today. The Zohar of Pesach is it's Pesach today. So not just this happened, but it happened today. And Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Reb Chaim's grandson, explains that this actually can be seen from the Rambam himself. The insistence that we mention that it happened today. This is the anniversary. That's why we're choosing this day. It's explicit in the Rambam's words. The Rambam says within the course of Hilchos Chametz Matzah, Perek Zayin, when he discusses this mitzvah, Lefi da'ato shel ben, aviv melamdo. The father has to teach the child in terms of what the child is capable of understanding, and therefore the Rambam says if he's a wise son, you see like this, similar to along the lines of the templates that the Haggadah gives us, Arba Abonim, Divra Torah. And what if him ben katan otipish? What if he's very young or not so quick? And you really just need to give him the synopsized version. Omerlo, the father says, Avodim hayinu, we were slaves. Ubalayla hazeh pada osanu HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on this night, Hashem redeemed us. That's very interesting. In other words, even for this very young child, who one has to keep things to the bare minimum, we do not add in other details. But this is apparently a core part of the story, to mention that it happened tonight. Tonight is the anniversary of when this all took place. That you can't leave out. But what's interesting is, and here Rav Asher Weiss picks up, is that the Rambam only mentions this with a small child. But what about everybody else? Where do we see the emphasis that it's on this night? Says Rav Asher Weiss, anyone who's beyond the capacity, but higher than the capacity of a small child, will understand that is the answer to Manishtana. Manishtana raises the question, what is so special about tonight? So the answer of the whole story is, that's what's special about tonight. Because tonight is the night. So it's very interesting. There's a certain, one could say, synergy between Manishtana and the answers that are given. We look upon Manishtana, whoever asks Manishtana is doing nothing other than preparing to receive the story, but they're actually contributing to the evening by emphasizing what a special night it is, and the answer that will come in the form of the story is, yes, it is a special night, because it's on this night that we had Geulas Mitzrayim. So, very interesting insight there into Manishtana. Moving along a little bit as best we can, we first tell the story of the sages that were reclining in Bnei Brak there, and interestingly, apropos of our earlier discussion, they spoke about Yetzias Mitzrayim the whole night. Now, the Stiplagon points out, Akilas Yaakov, that according to some of those present, that wasn't necessary. And it's very much connected to our earlier discussion. There's a machlokas between the Tanoim, sages of the Mishnah, to when can you eat the Korban Pesach? Chatzos or the whole night? Paralleling that machlokas about eating Korban Pesach, as we said, is also eating matzah, but will also be the question of to when is the mitzvah of Haggadah, of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? When does that apply? Because matzah is tied to Pesach, as we saw, matzah sumeroin, and the Haggadah is tied to matzah. Bavor ze lo amarti, ela b'shoshish matzah umar munachim lefanecha. Which means your view on the time frame for eating Korban Pesach will ultimately inform your view of matzah and of the Haggadah. Two of the sages that were at that Seder are of the opinion that the Korban Pesach is only until Chatzos. Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah are both on record as saying that Korban Pesach on a Torah level is only until Chatzos. Which raises the question, so why are they involved in the story the whole night? Comes Chatzos, that's the end of the mitzvah as far as they're concerned. But they keep going, says the Steipler, yeah, you know why? Because they're in Rabbi Akiva's house. And Rabbi Akiva, their host, is of the opinion that the Korban Pesach is the whole night. Which means the Haggadah is the whole night. And your personal view may differ, but he's your host, and you're his guest. Guests at Rabbi Akiva's table for that evening, everybody acted in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. It's amazing to consider this idea. One presumably could not tell the difference between those who continued to discuss the story because they felt the mitzvah is still there, and those who continued to discuss because they guessed at Rabbi Akiva. We assume everyone contributed, continued to tell the story equally in that way. But then we come to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And he famously says, I'm 70, I was never able to convince my colleagues to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night until Ben Zoma came along with this exposition, this drasha of Kol Yemei Chayecha, which he says to include the night, and even then the Chachamim say, no, it comes to include Yemos HaMashiach. The most basic question about this paragraph in the Haggadah is, what is this paragraph doing in the Haggadah? And the background to the question is, the mitzvah on Seder night is to tell the story called Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a special mitzvah for Seder night. What Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and his colleagues are discussing and debating is a mitzvah the entire year round. Either yes or no, but this doesn't stand or fall based on that. So why do we bring in the year-round discussion on the special evening where all agree there's a special mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? And some say, in response to this, the Aruch HaShulchan and others, that this is exactly the point. If indeed there is a mitzvah to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim every night, so then what's the special mitzvah on Seder night? We basically ask Manishtana, Laila Zemi, Kol HaLeilos. Every night there's a mitzvah to talk about it. So how is there a special mitzvah on Seder night? To which the answer must be, if every night there's a mitzvah to mention it, on Seder night it's more than mentioning it. It's telling the story. As we say, Kol HaMar B'Lasaper, it is Mitzrayim HaRezim Meshubach. So this actually is almost like by relief, or by contrast, the background to the uniqueness of Seder night, because on a basic level, there's a mitzvah every night. in the end of Shema to talk about Yitzias Mitzrayim. But the Maaseh Hashem asks a very basic question. Apparently, the moral of the story or the goal of bringing this discussion is there's a mitzvah to mention Yitzias Mitzrayim every night, although it seems to be a machlokas. This discussion actually is extracted from a Mishnah in the end of the first parak of Maseches Brachos. But the Haggadah leaves out the first four words of that Mishnah, which are Mazkirin Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos. We mention Yitzias Mitzrayim every night. Those four words that the Haggadah leaves out are seemingly the only words that it needed to put in, because they seem to be a consensus. It seems to represent the halacha. Mazkir and Yitzias Mitzrayim Balelos. Take that and now compare Seder night with that, and you'll see that Seder night needs more. So of the Mishnah, we actually delete the words that would most directly tell us there's a mitzvah every night, and we only bring the machlokas. That's a very interesting shaila. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, Hari ani kevin shivim shana. Now he says, I'm like 70 years old. As we know, this is based on the fourth parak of Maseches Brachos in the Gemara, he wasn't exactly 70 years old. According to Rashi, he was 18. The Yerushalmi says he was perhaps even younger. But when they told him to be the Nasi, and you know, if you don't have a white beard, so no one really takes your halachic decisions seriously, so then he got a white beard. And interestingly, by the way, everyone took him seriously now. Even though they know that he only has his white beard, so they'll take him seriously, and it still worked. Because people take you seriously if you have a white beard. But really, he wasn't 70. So that's why he says, Harayani kevin shivim shana. I'm like 70, because he's actually only 18 years old. But interestingly, back again in the Haggadah, or maybe even in the Mishnah, one can't help but feel that once you know that, it detracts a little bit from the oomph of what Elazar ben Azariah is saying. Because if he's really 70, then what he's saying is, you know, I'm 70 years old. In all my many years, I was never able to convince my colleagues. That's apropos. But now, once we know that Kur ben Shivim Shana means I'm like 70, but I'm not. So really what he's saying is, I'm not really 70. I'm only 18. And in all my few years, I was never able to convince my much, much older colleagues. It seems like the loading of the emphasis of the statement has been diffused once we realize he's not really 70. It doesn't sound like he's been trying to convince them for that long at all. Which is an interesting shaila, which Mefarshim asked. And there's many different answers, but the approach of the Maaseh Hashem to this Mishnah is absolutely out of this world. Deserves a festival in its own right. Here we are, says the Maaseh Hashem, talking about mentioning Yitzias Mitzrayim at night, as opposed to the day. Now, of course, day and night are parts of the day. They are. And there are halachas that apply to them. They do. But there's more going on here, says the Maaseh Hashem. Because as we know, the concepts of day and night more broadly refer to time frames for the Jewish people. Are they times of oppression, like nighttime, like galus? Galus is always associated with night. Geula, redemption, is associated with day. Which means the broader discussion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah about mentioning Yitzias Mitzrayim at night will have implications. What about mentioning Yitzias Mitzrayim if you're in a night zone or frame, if you're in Golus? And the question is very clear. You're celebrating having been redeemed from exile, but you're in another exile. Is there still meaning to that? And moreover, it seems, and he cites various sources for this, it seems that in the very first exile the Jewish people experienced, they stopped talking about Yitzias Mitzrayim. Because they were so traumatized by having been sent back into exile, they didn't see the traction. Why celebrate leaving Egypt when we're back in Bovel now? And that's part one of the things that we just let slide during those 70 years of Golus Bovel. That came back after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is in just such a time, because he is, when is he? He's in Yavne. The Sanhedrin is already in Yavne. That means the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed in his time. You're almost back like they were in Bovel. And that's as the Maaseh Hashem is what Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is intimating when he says, Hare ani kiven shivim shana. I'm like from that time, I'm like a child of 70 years. It's like that. Which 70 years? The 70 years of Golus Bovel. Well, people stop talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim because they're back in exile. And we're back in exile, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So it's like we're in Bovel again. Hare ani kiven shivim shana. It's like those 70 years all over again. But I don't think that's true, says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. I don't think that we should desist from talking about it. I think we should talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim at night. At night in all of its manifestations, meaning even in Golus. And that is his idea that he's looking to get across to his colleagues. Through Kol Yomei Chayecha, it's come to include the night. And it seems that his colleagues agree with him. They just think that Kol Yomei Chayecha comes to include Yomos HaMashiach when everything is okay again, but certainly in a time of Golus. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is addressing a question that has been relevant to a greater or lesser degree for the last 2,000 years. Namely, if you're back in Golus, it's like you're Kiven Shivim Shana, like those 70 years in Bavel. You're not in Bavel, but you're somewhere else, and the redemption hasn't happened yet. Should you still mention Yetzias Mitzrayim? Says Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, yes. That is an introduction to any Seder that will take place in Golus. And the question is why? And the two main answers to this question, which we can, Emirat Hashem, elaborate on as we continue next week, is that number one, of the two elements of the subjugation of Egypt, there was the physical element, but there was also spiritual damage, the 49th levels of Tumah. When we left Egypt, we got political freedom and we got the Torah. We haven't always maintained the political freedom, but we've never lost the Torah. And therefore, it could be that the emphasis shifts to perhaps the more spiritual aspects. We say Hashem took us out l'cheirus olam, for everlasting freedom. The Torah can never be taken away from us. As the Mishnah Chochmah says in Parshas Bo, v'chagosem oso chag l'Hashem, if you celebrate Pesach as a chag for Hashem, your relationship with Hashem, chukas olam t'chaguhu. That will be an everlasting, will never be without interruption. Other things are interrupted. But at the same time, even the more gashmius, the more political side of freedom, we also celebrate. And the reason is because our experience in Egypt, vis-a-vis later experiences, was like the root exile experience from which other exiles are branches, which means our redemption from there is the root redemption experience from which all other redemptions will be branches. We've had the root, the branches will follow. And that's worth celebrating, even as we're waiting for those branches to grow and to flower and to sprout, etc. Therefore, for these reasons, the two primary reasons, we understand that even if we're back in Golus and certain conditions have rivaled, if not surpassed, conditions as they were in Mitzrayim, for some people, some of our people over the generations, but Pesach is always there, either for, as we say, Geulaseinu, Upedus Nafsheinu, the spiritual element, and even the physical element. It's happened already. It is assured to happen again. And we look towards each Seder as we tap into the root redemption experience to further expedite and activate and energize the ultimate Geula, which should come b'mehera b'yameinu, if not between this week and next week, certainly, we hope, by Pesach or shortly thereafter. We'll leave it over here for this evening and pick up again with Hashem next week. All the best and besoros tovos leklal